This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 28th of October 2020. I'm Koo Soo Chuang and with Wong Xiaoning, back after a fortnight's hiatus. How are you, darling?
Pretty good.
Has absence made the heart grow fonder for somebody?
I don't like to lie on air, so I'll just say
No. We haven't seen each other in 2 weeks. It's been so long.
I know. You're always welcome into the studio more. It's just that you seem to be reluctant to drag your feet in.
No, cannot wake up, la. That's the problem.
Yo, don't admit it, la.
Serious.
Well, it is true. I mean, sleep is one of those things which are, it's very elusive for some people.
It is. Especially as you, trundle along in life. But we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks. How have you been? What have you been up to?
Well, we've been busy actually reporting all the changes with the CMCO and then, of course, the almost state of emergency.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say the almost.
Yeah.
It was a very busy work week. A lot of stories to cover and the politics, of course, continues.
I wonder what would have happened if they actually did call a emergency, you know. It's almost like there's no deadline to it, to its termination, right? Because I think there was a time in the 50s when we were in the state of emergency because of the communist crisis.
Yep,
and it was like for a long time.
Yeah, I think that was one of the issues. And then I think we were also thinking like, whether, because it's under section, under Article 150 in the Federal Constitution as to when it can be called, right? So it has to be grave and it has to be economic, health. And I remember one more criteria which slips my mind. So these standards, have they been met? All these questions we were asking.
Yeah. So yeah, rarely has been the lives and livelihoods of so many been held ransom by so few.
we already seen
lucky we went past that stage, you know. I think the royals, did the right thing eventually.
Yeah, but I think now the biggest issue facing us is, and you see this in all the papers, and we'll probably talk about it later at 6:45, is that businesses are really suffering as a result of the CMCO, especially F&B.
Yeah, and if you thought 2020 couldn't give you any more interest and excitement, before the end of the year, we've still got the budget for the year.
That's
Malaysia.
Coming up soon.
We've also got the US elections, and then we've also got our own position polls. But all that and more, I guess, in the next few months. But what are you going to be talking about in the next couple of minutes, more importantly?
I'm going to be talking about whether women bear the brunt of COVID-19.
Is that right?
Not just from not from a health perspective or medical perspective, but from a work perspective.
And I will talk about how we're going to try and do something to dismantle one of the most established status quos in the world. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Halos with Kyoto. Sounds like a Greek band singing about a Japanese person, right? I'm Chuang and joined by Xiaoning.
It's amazing how you manage to connect any dot, Chuang.
You think so?
Yeah, any dot.
Yeah, and only on one coffee, so that's something to bear mentioning. So anyway, so now that we are in the middle of a new normal, we are rethinking home ownership, vehicle ownership, how we work from whatever, right? Let's also reconsider something which has been brought up quite presciently by The Atlantic, which asks of all of us, what if friendship, not marriage, was at the center of life, right? Mm-hmm. And this is interesting because since time immemorial, marriage and finding the correct partner, having children, was one of your life's objectives, right? But what if it wasn't?
Yes, it was. I mean, so let's be honest.
It still is.
It's one of those societal norms that people expect you to.
And if you don't have one, questions asked of you, especially during Chinese New Year, and then you go back and, are you married yet? And have you got children? And you feel like punching them between the eyes, right?
I've stopped punching them.
You stopped punching them, right?
Okay, because I'm clearly at the brunt of these questions, right?
And there is a real mental and cognitive repercussion of all this, questioning, right? So if we're going to upend the status quo, why don't we upend the status quo as well? What if friendships and friends can supplant marriages, right? And then you have to go to level two and level three and ask, dissect it, right? What does a marriage give to you? It gives you these things, right? A, B, and C. What are those things? And can those A, B, C's, and D's be replaced by your friends, right?
I think on some level, yes. Maybe this article in The Atlantic resonates with me because I'm one of these people. I'm not married, right? So I can see the many benefits of friendships. And I also am a beneficiary of many friendships I have out there. And you're right. Society still looks at, I think, single women with a little bit of like
and
suspicion.
And single men.
Yeah, and single men with a bit of suspicion. You know, you get that raised eyebrow during Chinese New Year or family dinners.
Yeah.
And then as if you're like something wrong. You know, they're behind the scenes, they're like, oh, yeah, that one cannot, you know, she has her issues or whatever. And then you're like, oh, yo, okay, give it a rest, okay. So then, but your desire for companionship, your desire for friendship, doesn't go away just because you don't have a partner.
Yeah.
It still exists.
Yeah.
That void needs to be filled, right? I mean, some of us are very good on our own. We are. But it's nice to have a circle of friends. And I see that as I get older. And this circle of friends might be tiny. You're talking like maybe 3 or 4 friends.
Yeah. And they've all got to be in the same position, same point of view, same kind of like mindset, right?
And they must have one thing which I think we take for granted. They must have time for you.
Yeah, but if you're all in the same position, right, and I will cite the example of my sister in a few minutes, right? But if you break down what marriage gives you, what does it give you? It gives you friendship, companionship, right? And friendship and companionship are not the same thing.
They're not the same
thing.
A sense of security, I think that's
what. A sense of security. It gives you the ability to have progeny, right? Children, okay? It gives you some coital pleasure, if you know what I mean, right?
I think there's also comfort.
There's also comfort, which is also to do with companionship and friendship,
slightly
right?
Different. I mean, it's a slightly warmer kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. So all those things. I think, right, I think there's a certain extent where friendship can give you that, even for coital pleasure, if you know what I mean. Because it's basically FWBs, right? If you know what I mean. And then my sister, right? My sister had a group of friends, all girls, all in the same position, either divorced or still single.
Mm.
5 or 6 of them. And when my sister passed away a few years ago, right, I was genuinely blown away by the extent and the depth and the breadth of her friendships.
Yeah, they all turned up, right?
Oh my God.
To support your family.
Yeah.
And also support your sister, I'm very sure, before that.
Yeah, and the depth of the friendship was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And
you know the depth of the
right?
friendship when there's a crisis.
Yes. And you know who your real friends are. Right?
Because they pull together.
And then it made me question, right? First of all, it made me question the quality of my friendships, right?
Why?
First and foremost.
Okay.
Because I asked myself, do I have friends of this quality and depth,
You mean you didn't have any bros?
Of course I got
bros that you can trust.
You know, but guys are guys, right? They don't, you know what I mean? They're very, they can be very like tida-pa sometimes, right? But then the second thing is, I thought to myself, these friendships, in some ways, were superior to, for example, if she had been married. And she was married, my sister, right? And superior to that one single spouse because it just had that extent, you know.
I think it's also I know what you mean, and it's the connection.
Yeah,
I think
it's
that very important thing that we somehow forget is that emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
And some friends are always going to have that special space in your life. That,
yeah.
You know, and they also are the kind of people that make time for you, and you have to make time for them.
Yeah, and they've got that legacy, they've got the history and friends. And sometimes you meet your guy.
And
right,
I think 5. One other thing that friends must have is a sense, sometimes they judge, but at the end of the day, they love, and then they are non-judgmental.
They're non-judgmental. There's no conditions there, right?
There isn't, and they accept you for what you are.
I think this is something which is ripe for asking of the listeners, right? What do you think? Do friendships, and can friendships supplant marriages? Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Chris Cornell with Can't Change Me, one of the oft-quoted refrains between men and women.
I think it's partially true, though.
I think they can't. You can't change a man.
You can't change a woman either.
Yeah, you can't, right?
You must want the change.
Exactly. Either you change yourself or you don't change at all. Anyway, we'll be talking ad infinitum, Xiaoning, about the impact of the coronavirus on businesses and livelihoods and all that. But there's something which we don't really discuss in Malaysia, which is the state of the mental health situation, right? And according to this report in The Guardian, they've done some studies over there, the Boffins, and they found that of all the people that have been most impacted by the virus, and it's actually women who have suffered the most mental distress. And part of the article points out to the fact that they've not only got to juggle their professional commitments, they've also got to juggle their commitments to their children, which is something that it's exclusive by and large to women only.
Yeah, I think this is the unfortunate reality of COVID-19. And even though it's an article based in UK, I'm very sure it's pretty much the same scenario in Malaysia. And we just have to draw parallels with the recent reimposition of the CMCO.
Yeah,
right?
The third wave.
Yeah. So, you know, the CMCO was announced on this, I think, to be honest, somewhat expected, but the announcement came quite suddenly. And then the extension of it was also rather sudden. It was the day before it expired.
Yeah, exactly, right? We're all expecting school to start already.
Yeah, so imagine when these announcements are made, who do you think is the one scrambling? Who do you think is the one deciding, oh my goodness, what are we going to do with the kids? Because, you know, are we going to, we got to bring them back home. Who's going to look after them? So, okay, if you're one of the lucky ones where you have help at home, whether it's your own parents or whether it's a helper or, you know, someone you can rely on, great. But if you can't, who's going to be the one to stay at home and look after the kid? I don't want to pigeonhole people, but I'm quite sure if I just did a, you know, a simple survey, probably easily 7 out of 10 will be women who will be the ones, okay, I've got to take that emergency leave.
Yeah, I think by and large, this article really does focus on the European situation. Unless you're David Beckham and Posh Spice and you've got an au pair hanging around the house.
An entourage of help.
You don't have that assistance. But in Asia generally, you have got the, you know, you've got the maid situation. And by and large, that mitigates the damage a little
bit. Yeah, but not everybody.
That's true.
Not everybody can afford to have a helper.
No, you're right. And I also want to point out that I think, at least from a medical standpoint, from a medical statistics standpoint, women do generally handle stress better than men. And if you look at mortality rates, right, all over the world, it's uniform across the world. Men generally die before women, right?
And I think this, yeah, you're
generally,
right.
Generally speaking. And I think that is because the men are the bread makers, right? And then they go through more professional stress, generally speaking, medically speaking. And then they turn to things like alcohol and cigarettes and, you know, they suffer that. And as a result, they generally have medical conditions which lead to them having a lower mortality or high mortality.
Women generally have a longer life expectancy versus men, right? That's the point.
I think so. So I think that women generally handle stress better, which is a good thing because with this situation and COVID, it falls on the better shoulder, let's just say.
Yeah, but that doesn't discount the fact that women are still facing the brunt of it. And I think, you know, one of the reasons my own little observation. I think men, one thing, they don't verbalize their stress.
Yeah, it manifests itself in their habits, right?
Yeah.
Which is like smoking or drinking or both.
But the point is, I think, what can we then do to make everybody, not just women, but also men deal better with all this COVID-19 stress? Because I feel it. You know, I mean, when it first started on March 18, everyone thought it would go away in a month or two. And now we are heading into November and likely year end is going to continue.
Yeah.
So I've never experienced this in my... Nobody has experienced this in their entire life. 7 months of some form of lockdown where life has changed tremendously. And it's not like work doesn't go away. The work worries actually increase because you're worried, you know, can my business make it? Are we covering our costs?
No, this conundrum is way more complicated than a Facebook relationship, okay?
Yeah, Facebook relationship.
It's complicated. Because you can't easily, quite loosely say, hey, don't change your expectations. Both parents don't need to work. Only one person works and then the other one is a full-time parent, right? Male or female. It's easy to say, but unless you're making bigger bucks, you can't do that, right?
Of course you can't. And many Malaysian households desperately need two incomes.
Yeah. So what do you do?
And probably there's stress also from the outside whether you're going to be able to keep the two-income family going.
Correct.
And then at the same time, you've got kids at home who are screaming, who are bored, who are frustrated and don't understand what's going on and you can't blame them and they're not in school.
But I think there's ways of doing it, right? For example, there's this whole focus on international schools and private schools in Malaysia, right? I think it's an Asia-wide phenomenon, whereby the public school system is so mediocre that we think that international schools are better. I don't think so. I've come from that situation, and what you pay and what you get is completely off kilter. I think that if you send them to local school, right, and then you give them skills for life, which you don't get taught in school, you have equally as good a chance of succeeding than you have if you went to international. If I would even say that you go to international school, you might even be held back in some respects.
I would rather see it from the perspective whereby we raise the standard of our local schools.
Yeah, and you should, and we can.
That should nonetheless happen and should be happening and should be a priority. And I think what's worrying me about this is, you're talking about schools and the digital divide is so apparent when it comes to our local schools.
Correct.
I'm just curious, and I don't have the answer for this for parents. Maybe they let me know. For those kids now who are back home, right, for the last 3 weeks, what has the school, local schools, what is the curriculum like? Is there still some connection? Is there availability of content online? All these questions, right? But the women are the ones having to deal with these questions. They are worried. Are their kids getting the right education?
Yeah, I think this is something, again, for everybody to chip in and ask themselves and give us your feedback. Again, the Twitter handle is at BFM Radio or WhatsApp, shouting, not me, 018-789-8899. Don't go away, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 38 minutes past 6. That was Lord with Royals. Now, over in Hong Kong, Xiaoning, these news items have been flooding in into our inbox. Now, we know that there's been riots and there's been all kinds of social unrest there because of the draconian laws that have been passed. And now we have news that the UK-based activist group Friends of Hong Kong announcing that Tony Chung was planning to enter the US consulate on Tuesday and claim asylum because he was detained along with two other former members of a student pro-independence group. The first public figure, Chung, mind you, he's only 19 years old. Arrested in Hong Kong under this controversial new national security law.
Yeah, he's accused of involvement in an organization that has vowed to fight for an independent Hong Kong. He has, however, been released on bail. Now, we know, Hong Kong's national security law was imposed in June and makes secession, subversion of the central government, terrorism or collusion with foreign forces punishable by up to life in prison. Now, the South China Morning Post reports that Chung was at a coffee shop opposite the consulate when he was arrested on Tuesday morning. Footage taken from near the consulate shows the teenager being carried away by people dressed in casual clothing. Police say that Chung's arrest, along with the arrest of other student leaders, was part of an ongoing investigation. And hours after the arrest, unconfirmed media reports said that four activists managed to enter the U.S. consulate but were later turned away. And the U.S. consulate has not responded to inquiries from several news agencies.
Yeah, this adds the further complications in the whole issue about America's involvement in China and China's handling of Hong Kong. If the Americas give Chung asylum, then it throws more tension into the air between the two superpowers, clearly. But in the meantime, Hong Kong CEO Carrie Lam says they're trying to draft a law that will make COVID-19 tests mandatory for people with symptoms and high-risk groups because the government in Hong Kong said earlier this month that it was studying the legal framework for mandatory testing. And this is a region, obviously, the city-state has continued to slowly ease virus restrictions.
Yeah, remember just a few months ago, they were one of the first, I think, to offer free COVID-19 tests for anybody who wanted to volunteer. And I think quite a significant percentage of their population did do so. We actually had a discussion with Ben Cowling, who is a professor of epidemiology, I can never say that word properly, at the University of Hong Kong to discuss the merits of such a thing. And yes, it does pick up, you know, the sporadic asymptomatic cases of COVID-19 and I suppose prevent clusters from forming. But maybe from the success of what the experiment number one or test number one, they are now planning to kind of roll it out. But I would wonder whether, you know, you could actually ever do this in another country, force an entire population to carry out tests. I mean, even in the West, wearing of masks is contentious.
Yeah, exactly. It's really an analysis of two types of administration, right? One is the top-down approach, which is practiced by China / Hong Kong, which is now one and the same, almost. And then you've got the democratic process in America where you can say, you can plead the First Amendment and you've got your right to assemble and you can't tell me to stay at home. Do you know what I mean? So But you can see that in the number of infections. One is declining, perceivably, and the other one is increasing. And it's the third wave, right? But this is Hong Kong trying to balance out the economy and the health crisis, right? Because they're trying to liberate social gatherings. I mean, I think now bars and restaurants will be allowed to open until 2 o'clock in the morning. Dancing and live events can resume. Restaurants are allowed to operate at 3/4 capacity, up from 50%. And masks are not needed when exercising in indoor venues. And in fact, the number of people allowed at group gatherings will remain at just 4 for another week. So, I mean, they tried to put these SOPs in place, but at the same time, trying to address the health crisis.
Yeah, I think it of course, you know, it's that delicate balance, right, between flattening the wave and allowing economic activity to carry on. You cannot have one without the other. That's the reality of COVID-19. How can we live with the virus? So I think even in the case of Malaysia, every time you relax certain you relax your restrictions, you will see a bit of an uptick. Hong Kong suffered from it, Japan suffered from it, South Korea suffered from it, and we are seeing it now. So, you know, but the point is, even though we are allowing more economic activity, doesn't mean that you can forget your SOPs, which is, of course, wear your mask, sanitize your hands, and keep that physical distance.
Yeah, but it's not as if Hong Kong didn't allow that that voluntary program. They did run a voluntary program for testing. It only had a few results of positive infections. And of course, people were skeptical, right?
Yeah, are you harvesting our DNA?
Yeah, exactly, right? As well as that. And of course, people in Hong Kong disapprove of Carrie Lam by and large. According to the survey, 7 out of 10 don't approve of Carrie Lam. But it's happening all over the world, right? Even in Italy, and Italy protests have taken place over these new restrictions. And again, Italy is obviously directly opposite to what Hong Kong is.
No, actually, they were quite...
And Europeans generally,
yeah,
like,
but
you know?
They were quite obliging with the rules, I think, because they were the first European country to get severely impacted by COVID-19. At one point, they had the highest death rates. Now, I think the highest death rates per infection is Belgium. But definitely, they were quite, I would say, obedient, right? Because they had a very severe lockdown. But the worrying thing is that all of us, including myself, there is this thing about fatigue, right? Lockdown fatigue, restriction fatigue. And, you know, you struggle with it. But really, we are far, far away from flattening the curve. This is the new reality.
It is. Okay. 44 minutes past six. We'll come back after this with some social media and some international, in fact, local headlines. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. 6:48 in the morning. This is the morning run on BFM 89.9. That was the 90s Manchester band Suede with Obsessions. I'm Chuang, joined by Xiaoning. And this is the time of the day when we look at the local headlines. And I want to start with the Edge CEO brief, which is always a great read early in the morning to get up to date with business news. Glove manufacturers are making super profits, and they focus the Edge on Hartelager specifically. And this is quite an eye-popping graph because second quarter, forecast results for FY 2021, interesting, expected to be ₱500 million, which is basically just, I guess, reflective of the whole pandemic and the demand, global demand for these rubber gloves. Quite amazing.
Yeah, they are not the only ones that released results, by the way. Supermax also released results, and they had a bumper first quarter too, and they made ₱790 million.
Jesus,
it's
crazy.
Only 30 times more than what they did the previous quarter. And
I know,
I'm saying,
right?
That with like breathless breath, because yeah. I'm breathless just thinking about it.
How much money, man? Do you know what I mean?
They are the new billionaires for sure.
Also in the HCEO brief, the Securities Commission has granted LTAT 4 months extension to decide whether they want to privatise Bausted. And of course, I think there's a request for more documents and more discussions and due diligence of this acquisition. It's not going to be cheap, and it's going to be quite a necessary analysis. Don't rush into these kind of things, obviously.
Yeah. For me, I've got the Malaysian Reserve and the Star in front of me. And the headlines are not the same, but yet similar. And it's about the impact of the CMCO and the third wave. So the Malaysian Reserve says hotel industry suffers another blow with third wave infection. Clearly, with very limited interstate travel, especially from the Klang Valley, hotels around Malaysia are definitely suffering because at one time, when there was relaxation, I mean, seriously, everyone was doing a chuti-chuti Malaysia, getting to know their country better, and that kind of helped many of the hotel players. But with interstate travel ban, I'm sure they're back to feeling the brunt of COVID-19. Meanwhile, it's a similar story actually for hawkers, because many of them are seeing their businesses actually really dying and slowly trickling down due to the CMCO. So the Star features some of the store owners and even fancy restaurants who are feeling it and asking us to go out and support them. Because, you know, with the two people per table and everyone just nervous about the rising infection rates, even then, there's not many customers as it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Mid-Valley over the last month. And it's a bit of a ghost town there, which is so you know, unreal because, you know, Mid Valley is obviously somewhere where everybody and the dog went every day, right?
I mean, you couldn't get a car park there every weekend to save your life, right?
But still, IGB REIT, which is the owner, still has so many buy calls. And that's something else that was in the HCEO brief. But I want to point out something on Malaysia Kini, because Malaysia Kini has written an op-ed saying that Muhyiddin Yassin, Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, is waiting for UMNO to nominate an acceptable candidate to become DPM, okay? And why he's waiting, I presume, is because UMNO is the kingmaker in his fate, Muhyiddin's fate. And obviously, UMNO is, I presume, UMNO is tolerant of Muhyiddin if he allows more UMNO candidates and senior party people to ministership positions. And it's all a case, again, of high-level horse trading, essentially.
And this is something you should really listen to, our conversation with Oh Yee San yesterday. You can listen to it on our BFM app or on Spotify, because he really went into the weeds as to what the permutations could possibly be, and reminding us that politicking will continue, and it's not day by day, it's literally hour by hour that we will have to monitor this. But meanwhile, it's a funny story, and we're talking about food. You know, the CNN always reviews the world's top 50 food.
Penang Laksa, number 7.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a little bit of good news here. We are climbing up the ranks. Number 1 in the world is still Masamam Curry in Thailand. So the sad thing is we can't get to the center of the universe when it comes to Asam Laksa. We can't get to Penang to taste the best. But hey, at least we've done something a little bit better today.
Yeah, Malaysia really needs to address how it narrates everything that is good about Malaysia, because so many times the headlines are hogged by all this negative publicity. And speaking of negative publicity, something I hope which is positive, Anwar Ibrahim wants a bipartisan approach to the Budget 2021 discussion. Obviously, we are a few days away. I think we're about 10 days away or so from the announcement on November the 6th. And he wants both sides of the political divide to get together and discuss the budget so that we can get a unified approach to how we're going to spend the country's money, which theoretically should be the way forward, but it's never the case because it's always the ruling party that decides how to spend the coins.
But I did see something quite interesting on Twitter yesterday, and that was Tunku Zafro asking people for their comments.
I saw that. Yeah, yeah, Twitter, yeah.
Yes, I think trying to reach out to all of us, I think, to suggest what we should put in the budget, because if hotels are feeling the pinch, restaurants are feeling the pinch, small businesses are feeling the pinch, I think the budget 2021 really needs to address this.
I ask you, what would you like? The number one thing, Wong Shaoning, that you want to see in the budget?
I think it needs to. We do need to see some stimulus.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. I don't know how they're going to balance it because tax revenues are down. So that will be the big question mark. And I would like them to also address some of the medium to long-term structural issues that we face.
Well, nobody's asked me, but I'm going to say it anyway, right? I want three things.
Let me guess. You want lower taxes. Is it there in that list?
I want it to rain money. I want the government to bump up the debt-to-GDP ratio by another 10%. And I want them to give away free cash to everybody for 2 years. I want no taxes for 2 years as well, corporates and individuals, right? Just spend money like it's no tomorrow. And I want the structural reform, okay?
You want it all, Chuang.
I want it all, right? I want my cake and I want to eat it too. 55 minutes past 6, we'll come back after this with the business end of BFM. Don't go away, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.